Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400, or you can hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is values. Both my guests are going to challenge us to consider our values in business and in daily living, and they're both going to give us more information to make better decisions about our actions. In our first half hour, we'll look at business values. In the second half hour, we'll look at our values towards the animal kingdom. In recent years, there's been an unprecedented breakdown in public trust of business, spurred in no small part by the instances of unethical behavior at some of the world's most powerful institutions. My first guest says the real challenge for business students, employees, and executives isn't knowing what's right or wrong, it's knowing how to act on those convictions within an organization. She's going to show us how to give voice to our values in the workplace. If you've got some examples of moral dilemmas at work, you can add to the conversation by calling us at 639-0008. Mary Gentile is a PhD. She consults on management education and values-driven leadership. In her 10-year tenure at Harvard Business School, she developed and taught the school's first course on managing diversity and helped design and taught its first required module on ethical decision-making. Currently, she's the director of Giving Voice to Values curriculum and senior research scholar at Babson College. Her articles have appeared in numerous places like the Harvard Business Review, Strategy in Business, CFO Magazine, and the list goes on and on and on. She has written several books on ethics and diversity. Her latest book is titled Giving Voice to Values, How to Speak Your Mind When You Know What's Right. She lives in Arlington, Mass. With her family. Welcome to the show, Mary. How are you today?
I'm well. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you, Bill.
Well, it's a privilege to have you on the show. So let's just dive right into it, shall we? If you take a look at today's business headlines and ask what went wrong, I mean, recent events at British Petroleum, Goldman Sachs, Hewlett-Packard, Toyota, they indicate that our current approach to business ethics doesn't seem to be working. So what are these high-visibility events telling us?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think the impetus behind developing this approach to thinking about and acting on our values and this curriculum as well came from precisely that same feeling in myself. I was suffering from what I call often a crisis of faith. I'd been working in this area for a couple decades, and I started to feel like I wasn't sure if it was ethical to teach about business ethics, because it's all well and good to raise these issues, but if it's not possible for people to be effective when they try and act on their values, then is this just an exercise in political correctness? And so that led me to take a different approach. I took a look at what we typically do in business education and in corporate training around ethics, and a lot of it has to do with raising awareness so people recognize issues or teaching them how to analyze what the right thing to do is. And in my view, when you look at those examples you just listed, Bill, the ones that are on the front page of the newspapers, people are pretty aware that something wrong was going on there.
Yes, they are.
And, you know, it wasn't like they were real gray areas. But the challenge was more that people didn't feel that they knew how to be effective at trying to address them. And so I thought that's where we really need to pay attention.
All right. Well, let's face it. MBA students, where you're teaching right now, they're not generally known as warm, fuzzy people. In fact, They're considered sort of ruthless and unethical. And in many business schools, you know, business ethics is considered to be an oxymoron. So why'd you choose to teach ethical-based decision-making at a business school level?
Yeah, well, you know, you're absolutely right. And I think the reason that I'm teaching it in this context, I think there's a couple things. One is it's so important. It's so essential. I mean, the business practice and the impact of business for good and ill on all our lives is so huge. So obviously this is a very important issue to address. Secondly, you know, capitalism at its best relies on trust. It relies on reputations that people believe in. It relies on the ability to engage in arm's length transactions. And so it seems that, you know, it's needed in business as much or more than anywhere else. But I think your first point about, you know, the kinds of individuals who are attracted to business schools, that was also, I think, a reason why I started to address this, because I was reading an article a number of years ago, and the gentlemen involved, Greg Bees and Peter Crampton, were talking about ethics in negotiation, and they posited this idea of a bell curve, and they were saying you should think about this in negotiations, but it occurred to me to be very relevant in business schools. And they said if you think about most people as, you know, at one tail end of the bell curve are people we would call opportunists, and these might be those people who will do anything in order to maximize their material self-interest. And at the other end, there might be people we'll call idealists. And these are people who say, I'm going to act according to my values no matter what. The bulk of us, myself included, I think, fall under the bell, which we could call pragmatists. Mm-hmm. And I think MBA students, most of them, fall under the realm of pragmatists. And how I'm defining pragmatists there is people who say, I would like to act according to my values, as long as I didn't feel that it put me at a systematic disadvantage. Now, that doesn't mean as long as I know it will always work, but rather that I think I have a shot. Because if you think about the people who go to business school, these are not people who are assured of success in everything they do. They're trying to learn how to develop a product that will sell or to create a strategy that will be effective in the competitive marketplace. But there's always a certain degree of risk, but they feel that they're getting the skills and the tools to be more effective at that. And I thought, why don't we approach ethics that way? Why don't we start from the assumption that we'd like to act on our values if we could do so effectively, and then teach us how to do so?
Great. We're talking to Mary Gentile, everybody, author of the book Giving Voice to Values. This is a really interesting subject because, Mary, in my little world is black and white. Ethics is a black and white subject. Either something is ethical or it isn't ethical. But the basic premise of your book, and one of the basic premises of your book, is that people know the difference between right and wrong. However, in today's modern corporations, we're so diverse and people come to the company from different backgrounds, beliefs, upbringings, and everything else. How can we assume that everyone shares the same value system about doing right and wrong? And then how can we assume we'll ever reach any consensus regarding an ethical issue?
Yeah, that's a really, really important point. And I want to be clear that I'm not suggesting that every issue is black and white. There are those issues that are thorny, kind of right versus right, or even wrong versus wrong kinds of gray areas, especially when you're, as you just pointed out, especially when you're operating in an increasingly global environment where people come from different life experiences and different legal norms and social norms, and also in a world where technology is so rapidly changing our experience. I mean, our very concept of property rights is evolving because of what we can and can't do through information technology these days. So there are gray areas, but in fact, as I said earlier, so many of the challenges that really cause us to slap our foreheads and say, you know, what is wrong? What are we teaching in business schools? What are we modeling in our corporations? Are often those situations where, in fact, it was more clear. The other thing is that, you know, in this approach that I talk about, and it's based on interviewing people and talking to people who have voiced and acted on their values, we identified seven pillars or principles. And the first one is values. And if you take a look at research that's out there about across cultures and across time, even though there are certainly different cultural norms and cultural experiences and history, there does seem to be a set of core values that is widely shared. They tend to call, scholars call them hypernorms. They're basically a list of pretty much universal values. The thing about them is that it's a really, really short list.
Right. I mean, there'd be such things as don't kill somebody. All right, yeah, that would be a hypernorm.
Absolutely. Or actually, they tend to be things like integrity, fairness, compassion, which I would imagine not killing someone falls
under that.
Compassion. They're kind of basic. And so what that teaches us is that if you're operating in that kind of an environment, first you want to check the issue and make sure that you are, in fact, operating from a values-based position and not just a preference or a style issue. But then secondly, if it is an issue that rises to that level, you want to make sure that when you present it to the person you're trying to persuade, that you tend to appeal to one of those values that is more likely to be shared by your audience. And that's part of how you get across when you're dealing in that kind of a context.
All right, we're talking to Mary Gentile, everybody. You said that there are seven pillars, values being the first of those pillars. Just real quickly before we go to a commercial break, Mary, what are some of the other pillars in the seven pillars?
Well, the second one is choice. And what we mean by that is that we're not talking about good and bad people. The people I've talked to, everyone I've talked to, including myself, has in fact voiced and acted on our values sometimes, failed to do so other times. So this is about how to enable your choice. The third is normalization, the idea that these are not unusual situations. You know, you're going to run into values conflicts in your business life and in your personal life, and the more you anticipate them and practice them, the less they put you into that tailspin of anxiety. The fourth is purpose. The idea there is we found people who are able to voice and act on their values effectively tended to appeal explicitly to a broader sense of purpose. The fifth has to do with self-knowledge and alignment. We found that you need to play to your strengths. If you see yourself as a risk-taker, frame the ethical challenge as the riskier position. And if you see yourself as fearful, frame the ethical conflict as the safer route. The sixth is voice, and what we mean by that is simply that it becomes really important to practice saying these things out loud to people who can serve as peer coaches, so it becomes more of a default position for yourself. And the last one is reasons and rationalizations, and that's where we really identify some of the most common arguments that people experience when they do try and voice their values and how to address those.
Great. We're talking to Mary Gentile, everybody, author of the book Giving Voice to Values, How to Speak Your Mind When You Know What's Right. Mary, we're going to have to pause to do some commercials here, pay some bills. However, when we come back, I want to go topical on you. You know, Michael Douglas is coming out with a new movie where he's playing Gordon Gekko again. I want to talk to you a little bit about greed is good and that whole 1980s mentality, maybe how things have changed from 1987 to today. Don't answer that right now. Answer it after we come back after this short break.
And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. We're having a very stimulating conversation with Mary Gentile, author of the book Giving Voice to Values. And Mary, before we went away to the break, I brought up something in the news that's going to be coming out this weekend, as a matter of fact. Michael Douglas, he's starring in the lead role of Gordon Gekko. Remember him from 1987 when he said, greed is good? Well, he's back in the public eye. Oliver Stone's latest movie, Wall Street Never Sleeps, comes out. And Gekko has been released from prison. And he's re-entering society. Now, I want to ask you to think back, because you are an ethicist. You've been looking at this over a long period of time. How have business ethics changed from when we first met Gordon Gekko in 1987 until today?
Well, I guess I would think that in some ways they haven't changed at all, but what has changed is the context. I think at the time that the first Wall Street movie was coming out and we were hearing greed is good as the kind of slogan there, there was this sort of sense, there was this sort of feeling that, you know, if you do it right, you can in fact become part of this sort of golden group. You can be part of the elite who managed to play the system and take advantage of it and succeed the way Gordon Gekko did in the early part of the first movie. I think right now we're in a context where there's less tolerance for that, where there the number of people who have been able to share in that success versus the number of people who have been truly hurt by the failures of the economic system most recently are pretty much out of whack. And so there's a different context, there's a different audience. And in some ways, that makes it both the requirement for the kind of lessons that I'm trying to talk about and skills and tactics higher, but it also makes the appetite and the desire for them higher. I think people want to feel it's possible to do something different.
All right. Now, that's an interesting point, Mary. So you say there's less tolerance for the hard-driving businesses, good, greed is good sort of thing. And yet, and you also say that we know the difference for the most part between right and wrong. So give me, what are some of the stumbling blocks that prevent us from acting on our personal values at work when we absolutely know what is right and what is wrong?
Right. Well, there's so many of them, and I'm sure that I know I certainly recognize them for my own life. I'm sure you do as well. But, you know, we get into a situation, and I think one of the most powerful things is that we suffer from what I call preemptive rationalization. And what I mean by that is that you're working along and something happens and you have a feeling it's wrong. But, you know, without even reflecting on it, you know this is not going to be easy. You know it's going to be hard to address. And so before you start to think about what could I say, what could I do, we almost unconsciously start engaging in these preemptive rationalizations. And those are things like, well, maybe it's not wrong after all, or maybe I don't have all the information, or maybe this is just standard practice in this industry, or maybe this is the norm in this company, or it's really my boss's responsibility after all, and things of that nature. And you start engaging in those kinds of preemptive rationalizations, so you, before you've even thought about whether there's an alternative, you've kind of released yourself from doing so. And so part of what I'm trying to suggest is that if we can anticipate these kinds of scenarios and we can normalize these kinds of scenarios, we are in fact preparing ourselves to create a kind of safe space to postpone those rationalizations and to think about, well, what if I was going to act on this kind of situation? What might be possible for me to do?
Well, I know exactly what you're saying, Mary, about these preemptive rationalizations. I mean, throughout my career, I've used a lot of them, and some that you really didn't mention in there. I often used to think, well, you know, I wonder if my boss is even going to be receptive to my opening my mouth here and saying something, or, you know, I didn't want to feel ostracized or criticized or appear not to be a quote-unquote team player by saying something negative in the face of something that I clearly felt uneasy about doing.
Absolutely. The fear of being marginalized, the fear that you will be separated from, you know, where the real action is in the future, the fear that you're simply going to, you know, antagonize your boss, you know,
right.
Or even not your boss, sometimes your colleagues, you know, that they're going to see you as a troublemaker, someone who is making more work for them. All of these things come into play. And then, of course, there's also simply the groupthink that comes into play, where you start thinking, well, maybe it's not wrong after all.
Yeah, which is an absolute stumbler, the groupthink. We're talking to Mary Gentile, everybody, who's the author of the book Giving Voice to Values. And Mary, one of the things that you state in your book that I like is you say that the typical kinds of value conflicts we will encounter are often predictable, part of that normalization you were talking about.
Mm.
Because they are predictable, there's an opportunity to anticipate the reasons and rationalizations that we're going to hear in defense of whatever it is they're trying to defend, and to literally craft some scripts or some action plans, call them what you will, and practice delivering those before we get stuck into that environment. Now, tell me, could you expand on that? What are some of the things that we could be thinking about in advance to help short-circuit some of these moral dilemmas we're going to face?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I found that the kinds of rationalizations that we tend to hear typically fall into some predictable categories. As you said, one of them that you hear a lot is, it's not material. It doesn't rise to the level of being a big enough number to care about. Another one is, it's just standard practice. This is, in fact, what's expected. Another one is, if I acted in this way, I would be being disloyal to someone else. You know, I would be betraying my colleague, my boss, my coworker, my friend, my supplier. And the fourth one that we hear a lot is, it's not my responsibility. This really is the responsibility of someone else in the organization in another area or a higher level. So those are the four we hear most often. There are others, of course, but a lot of the things that we encounter will fall into those categories. And they are, in fact, vulnerable to debate and to response. But what I think becomes important is to actually, before we start responding to them, before charging in there with some sort of, you know, self-righteous little speech, we actually need to think about what is at stake for everyone involved. And that's not because we're trying to decide whether or not it's right or wrong. We've already have our feeling about or our belief about that. But rather, it's because we want to think about how can I frame my position in such a way that I don't have to villainize the person I'm trying to persuade, so I don't have to antagonize my boss, but rather I can understand the pressures that he or she is under and try and find a way to help resolve that and present my position in a way that's going to be more easily heard. So, you know, you think about the most recent scenarios with British Petroleum, for example, that you raised at the top of this conversation. You know, I was reading about those, and you're thinking there had to be people who knew there were some problems. And the more I read, the more I find, in fact, there were people who spoke up. There were engineers at BP. There were managers at Halliburton and Transocean. There were, of course, some of the regulators at the Mineral and Mining Service agencies. So people were speaking up, but they were not being that effective for all the reasons that we talked about. And so what I would think is that what you really want to do is think about, you know, rather than, you can imagine how that happened. You know, one individual said something to his boss offline and kind of quickly got shut down because we don't have enough money, we don't have enough time, we can't do this. Or maybe somebody raised something, outside of the office and then they kind of had doubts about it. What we need to do is think about, rather than having these arguments come up as popcorn, you know, here, there, and everywhere, and simply being shut down, to see whether there's a way to create some sort of a drumbeat that builds so that you actually gather the data you need, that you find examples, that you build a coalition. One of the things that I learned in talking to people is that you don't just make a good argument. You think about what arguments have ever persuaded the person I need to persuade in the past and try and come up with something similar to that. Or if it's not an argument, think about who does the person I need to persuade listen to typically? Maybe it's not me. Maybe I need to get to you and then you need to get to him or her. So you need to start thinking about this strategically in just the same way you would build a case for some new business proposition that you have in mind. You know, it's not just standing up with moral courage. Sometimes it's really being morally competent and strategic.
All right, we're talking to Mary Gentile, everybody, whose book is Giving Voice to Values. Mary, I love the preemptive rationalizations you gave us. It's not material, it's standard practice and so forth. The one that really jumps out at me, though, is number four, it's not my responsibility. That's the old Nuremberg defense from World War II for all the ex-Nazis, that it's not my responsibility. However, I want you to comment on this because I'm hearing that more and more in this environment where people are scared for their jobs. People are frightened that, you know, if they get laid off or fired from here, they're not going to find anything else. So how do you know, just comment on that. How do you address this? It's not my responsibility. I'm going to lay low until this thing blows over mentality.
Yeah. Well, I think that the interesting thing about that one is that the seeds are within the objection itself. If I say to you, this is not my responsibility, I'm kind of already conceding that I think there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, then I can start positioning myself with you, or you can start positioning yourself with me in a different way. Instead of being in a position of trying to persuade me or seeing me as the person who doesn't get it, now we're on the same side, and we're actually, I can try and engage you in problem solving, and I can try and engage you in thinking through this with me and thinking, well, can we work together to try and figure out how we can influence the individual whose responsibility we think it truly is? So in other words, you always want to find a way to position yourself as working with someone, to enlist them to help you solve a shared problem, rather than, you know, positioning yourself as, you know, their accuser or someone who has decided that they are, in fact, bad or wrong.
Or just be perceived as being judgmental. We're talking to Mary Gentile, everybody, giving voice to values, how to speak your mind when you know what's right. Mary, we've only got about a minute left. I mean, time is really flying when you talk about ethical issues. But my last question for you is this. Some would argue that Goldman Sachs didn't have a corporate culture that embraced ethical behavior, or at least beyond increasing the shareholder value. What can an organization do to better protect themselves and their employees from ethical transgressions?
Right. It's the question of leadership. And a lot of times when people read Giving Voice to Values, they think, oh, this is all about the person lower in the organization having to speak truth to power. And, of course, it includes some of that. But I think it's a huge and important responsibility of leaders to voice their values, and they can do that in a number of ways, one of which is simply creating a culture where it's possible to voice dissent, where you welcome and embrace people presenting different perspectives and points of view. I think another is a culture where you share stories of times when people have, in fact, voiced and acted on their values to good effect. So that is something that is held up as a model. And I think the third and maybe the most powerful one is when senior leaders will share out loud their own thinking and reasoning process of how they came to a values-based position so that they are modeling that for their reports.
Well, that's all very good advice. We're talking to Mary Gentile, everybody. Her book is Giving Voice to Values, How to Speak Your Mind When You Know What's Right. It is a great read. It's out there. Mary, I can't believe we're out of time. Thank you so much for being our guest today here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
Well, thank you so much. It was fun, Bill.
We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay.